A61.
Number 23B.
So we go to life as a synonymous term. And as we have seen in principle, that the moment we see the oneness with principle, that principle begins to operate as itself. That principle begins to demonstrate itself. And what is it that principle demonstrates? It demonstrates actually life, and then truth, and then love. And it is really that which we are looking forward to be demonstrated, a better sense of life, a better sense of health in truth, health in a general way, and a better sense of fulfillment and accomplishment in love. Therefore, in order to demonstrate life, we cannot demonstrate life until we have a better grasp of the nature of principle as mind, spirit, and soul. If we don't have a grasp, a proper grasp of mind, spirit, and soul, we are going to try to demonstrate an experience, life, a being, an existence, an experience that is looking out for mortal mind's business, a material existence, and a limited corporeal sense of existence. Therefore, we would never demonstrate life as what life is, which is free from mortal mind, free from matter, free from body. So only a better sense, and therefore the constant culturing of a better sense of mind, spirit, and soul, taken as our fundamental basis from which we operate, that's principle, taking that as our principle, we actually begin to demonstrate principles' ideas. And principles' idea is the ever newness of life. Principle never repeats itself because it's infinite. And because it's infinite, therefore there is no routine, no going over the old ground, because principle never repeats itself. Every moment, every incident, every experience must be new. So we start out by culturing our sense of life. We have first that life is a life principle, that life is not just something, but that there is a principle, and that life flows out of a principle. I think this is something worthwhile for each one to think out at home in quietude, how we cannot demonstrate life without having a good sense of the creative principle, mind, spirit, soul. Just worthwhile thinking it out. It's no use that I make a lot of words about it. It's something that each one in its quietude must be pondering, must realize, so as to make up his mind what does he feel life is all about. Is life all about a better mentality, mortal mind? Is life all about a better material situation, counterfeit of spirit? Is life all about having a better, stronger, healthier body, counterfeit of soul? Or is life something that says only that which principle brings forth constantly is actually being, is actually isness? So life, the life principle, is bringing forth a sense of isness, of beingness, And therefore the Bible symbolizes that life principle usually through the symbol of the Father as a person of God. Person of God is principle. A person of God in its office as life, in its office as that which always brings forth new, that which is supporting, maintaining all that is created through mind. So Father is symbolizing that synonymous term, life. The moment we have that sense of life as that which is supporting, we have here the self-sustaining life. That life must not be sustained. That we don't sustain life through blood, food, exercise, etc., etc. We only sustain the body with it and keep the body in better shape with food and exercise and good air and so on, so that is all right. But that has just to do something with the material, wise level, something which we don't have to discard, which is wise to look after it, but it doesn't have to do anything with life itself. So sustaining life is something else than sustaining the body or sustaining a long life here on this earth. Life, Mrs. Eddy says, you have that as a next idea, is self-sustaining. How is life self-sustaining? You know, we like that idea that life is self-sustaining and then we don't have anything to do. But does it actually sustain itself just by stating it? Just because Mrs. Eddy said so? Does a statement really achieve anything? A statement doesn't achieve anything. So what is the inner nature of life self-sustaining? Why does life self-sustain? On what ground can we experience life as self-sustaining? Yes, will you try it?
Self-creating.
Life is self-creating? Yes.
Always bringing forth something new.
Life is always bringing forth something new. Yes. Do we experience that very often? How can we experience it? This is the fact, absolute fact. The question is, do we experience it? Do we experience it that life is self-creating, as you say, self-sustaining, self-supporting? How do we see that? Is that a statement or is it a consciousness? And if it's a consciousness, what kind of consciousness?
It's infinite. It sustains itself out of its infinite abundance,
this
affluence of life, the abundance of life.
The abundance of life, yes. How do you experience the abundance of life? How do you feel that abundance of life? Yes, Edith?
Well, life rests on the creative principle of mind and soul.
Yes.
And once we understand this, then we're aware of the self-sustaining principle of life.
Principle? So, in order to have life's self-sustaining ability, we don't have to think about life. We have to think about and be conscious about the creative principle. This is a bit the paradox of it, but we have to see, where does the self-sustaining life come from? Or else we sit here in a chair and say, well, life is self-sustaining, life is self-creating, and nothing happens. We're just sitting there. And we make wonderful statements. And that doesn't really do much. So we have to see that statements and the spiritual import are two things, and so the spiritual import grows on us when we are aware of the creative principle, mind, spirit, soul, and therefore go back to the ideas of mind. There, we have the newness. There we see that mind always brings forth new ideas, that mind creates ideas. And therefore I begin to see the newness of life when I go back to mind and begin to see there starts all the newness of life. There I begin to see, to see that mind knows all, that mind knows that which I do not yet know, but mind knows it. And therefore because mind knows all ideas, and therefore because mind wants to manifest itself, it has the drive to manifest itself, and to that life says, yes, gone, 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 you are it, you are it, you are the only beingness there is. And so these new ideas come to us as inspiration, they come to us as exalted thought, they come to us as God's thoughts coming to men, but not just because we state that life is self-sustaining. Yeah? So, can you see that we never leave any synonymous term behind? With every synonymous term we go forward. We never leave any synonymous term behind. If we try to leave it behind or don't know them, then these synonymous terms don't operate. They don't mean a thing. If we don't know that mind precedes life, and you would say, now I come back to the question, I would come say, life is self-sustaining and brings always something new, creates something new. What do I expect to be new? A new robe or a new dress or a new house or a new garden? Or what is this new? And it can only be new ideas. That's the only, these are the only elements that come. In mind. In mind. So I see that the self-sustaining life is bringing forth constantly new ideas of mind. And because life rests on spirit, I can see that life therefore always brings forth constantly the new birth. Therefore constantly renews the true substance of being. So I get the newness of substance. Yes? And so in soul I begin to see that life that is bringing forth always something new rests on soul, that says that life brings constantly forth always clearer and clearer, more definite new ideas. And I have a sense of the newness of soul. And all that on the basis that principle operates by itself. That it operates by itself through its categories. And my consciousness goes along the categories and sees, yes, 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 that's why it. Principle goes along the category and says, I'm the Word. I establish myself. Principle says, I have a Christ. That my consciousness goes along the category of the Christ and says, this principle can't help but expressing itself, but pushing forth out and manifesting itself. It can't be kept back. And I get the terrific sense of life as Christianity, where I see life just explodes everything that stands in the way. And you have the terrific, irresistible force of life. Nothing can stop it anymore. Yeah. So that's life. Yeah. All right. What is a truth and what is a scientific truth? A truth is that life is self-sustaining and ever new. And this is not a scientific fact. Scientific fact is when life is new and is always new, on the ground that life builds on mind, spirit, soul, principle. That's the biggest frame of reference within which life operates. And then these statements become scientific statements, scientific truths. And then they have power. Then they work. Yes? So you have their self-sustaining. Everything that has to do with that self-sustaining, like we have self-creative, self-existence, but we can put in all the other terms which we know about life, that life preserves itself, that life conserves. It's the preservation of life, the conservation of life. Saying what? Saying what? Saying, what did we have in soul? The infinite capacity of soul. The infinite ability to contain. And life comes and says, and I keep that always new. I see that this is always preserved and conserved, that it is constantly sustained and maintained. And so you get the sense of life always having the inner ability through this infinite impulsion of the divine principle operating, that that which is constantly being newed and renewed. What else do we have here? Actually, we could have here the sense of mutation, that life is that which brings forth mutations. What is a mutation? What is a sense of mutation? We have a terrific break. After principle, you know, there is that break, that something quite different. What is a mutation?
Change forms.
Yes, change forms. Spontaneous new form. The point about mutation is not so much new forms, because also a birth can bring forth a new form, the newness of life. But mutation is very different, huh?
Combined form?
No. A mutation is a coming into being of a new form, not on the basis of the law of cause and effect. An effect is also always something new. But if you reason along the law of causality in mind, or causality, where you see that every cause brings about an effect, that there is no effect without a cause. That's the law of causality. That's why we say, on the level of Christian Science, we say, well, if we have fearful thoughts, that's cause, we may become sick. That's the effect. Then you correct it and say, all right, instead of having fearful thought, I can correct it and see that in divine mind there is no fear, because mind is fulfilled and has no fear, and that brings about a correction and another effect, and I may get well again. That's the law of cause and effect. But the higher law of causality is the law of mutation. The law of mutation says something new comes into being without the process of causality. The New Testament called that grace, the gift of grace. And Paul was very hot on that law, because Paul was fighting the old law of causality. The old law of causality of the Old Testament said, because you have been a bad boy, you have to suffer, and you have to suffer so long until you have established a balance, your balance sheet is in order again. So much wrong deeds, so much wrong effect, so much suffering. And so you have to suffer as long as until your wrong deeds are balanced. And he came and said, this is not the law of Christ. The law of Christ is not that we earn our salvation through obedience to the law, but that we live by grace. That was his great battle cry. We live by faith. We live by grace. We live by what? By the fact of seeing that the divine principle always brings forth something new, without that we have to earn it. And that's grace. Without that we have to labor for it. It is a gift of grace given unto me by the effectual working of God or of Christ, he says. That's the law of mutation. There is no cause in the past that leads to an effect in the now. The law of causation of life says, because being is, you always have right when you want to have it right at every split second, everything right there. It's a gift. We don't have to work for a gift. For wages, we have to work. We have to work so and so many hours and sweat and so on, and then as a recompense, we get then our wages. When we get the gift, we haven't done a thing. We just get it. That's why we give a gift. Without a, well, without labor. And life is of that sort. Life says, right from principle, right from above, right from principle. Principle always operates and projects as life constantly its new ideas into being. It doesn't ask, what have you been doing before? It just says, I am, and I can't be anything else but what I am, and therefore I give without asking, without making a bargain. The Old Testament has a bargaining God. It's the God of the traders. I give you so much, and you give me back so much. The New Testament God is no more a trading God, a bargaining God. He's the God of grace, of life. That's why Jesus suddenly, after the whole development of the Old Testament, suddenly called God a Father. The Old Testament never called God a Father. He wasn't a Father. He was a slave driver. Well, what does the father do? He just supports the family. He goes and sweats. And he comes and gives and gives and sustains. And that's the nature of mind, spirit and soul. The moment it touches the point where we say, this is a principle, mind, spirit, soul is now a principle, mind, spirit, and soul is now no more a way how to climb up the ladder and see what is right. Now you have identified the whole nature of mind, spirit, and soul with principle, and principle says, now I take over. I take over now. I operate. I am the self-operative principle, and therefore I give life. I give. That's life. I give. And that is what you have here, that self-sustaining, self-supporting, self-providing, always conserving life.